Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Welcome back. Hour number 4, Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690, the Hot Topic Radio with Gallo and the Seanster Sean Campbell at 7, Connor McKenna in at game night at 8 o'clock. Rod Francis is here as well. Thank you to David Trenta Dewey. And we are going to Italia right now. Were we going to Rome for Michael Farber? Michael Farber in Rome? How are you?
I am in Rome after watching two periods at the airport last night. Got on a plane, so I missed the third period. I saw Pajot's non-goal, and I saw a bunch of Carey Price saves. So I think I got the picture.
Yeah, you got the only thing you missed was kind of a hairy last 90 seconds in the Canadiens' end. Ottawa kept getting the putt back. Price would make a save, face off. Ottawa would get the putt back. Canadiens would be running around. Price made the save. They got the puck back. Same. And then time ran out.
So what was once known in Montreal as the nervy ninth, this was the scary sixth.
There you go. That's a good one. Yeah. What are you doing in Rome?
I'm meeting my daughter. My wife and I are here. Our daughter, who has been on your show,
yes,
of course, had some time off. So this is the first vacation I've had during the playoffs since forever, actually. First one.
This is pretty cool. So what time is it? It's after midnight there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is after midnight, and I'm jet lagged, but that's well worth it. Especially, I was on tenterhooks a little bit, too, because I've got a Carey Price story all set to go in Sports Illustrated. It'll be out next week. And if it's 3-3, that story never runs because, of course, Game 7 on Tuesday. And if Ottawa had won that as well, the big story in the hockey world would be Senators' comeback, not Carey Price. What a good goalie. So I had some skin in this game for a change.
Well, I think a lot of us who have watched Carey Price since he came into the NHL, after what happened in Game 5, he responded the way I think I'm safe in saying most of us expected him to respond.
Yeah, you expect that, but then again, if you were watching Game 4, and I was in Ottawa for that, it looked like the Canadians were playing for the loser point. Oh, let's just get to overtime. We get a point here, guys. And the third period was so dreadful. And bounces happen.
Yep.
And, it's essentially a 1-0 game, and, something goes in. And as well as Price played, and he is the best goalie in the game, and there's no argument about that, stuff happens. And Ottawa is that was a valiant team you saw. I'm very impressed with how they did things. Erik Karlsson is so much fun to watch, and Turris played well, and Stone played well. It was a team with a lot. Now, they have something to talk about forever, too. It's just like Toronto talks about Carey Fraser missing the high stick, Wayne Gretzky and Gilmore in Game 6 in 93, and how all of Canada used to talk about Joseph Kampala from the 72 series.
Well, you're leaving one out. I got
it
for our fans in Quebec. Carey Fraser, yeah. Alain Côté, Brian Hayward,
yeah.
Remember that?
Another one, yeah. We've mentioned Carey Fraser twice here.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always something that's going to stick on in their craw, and this is what they've got. Got a good look at the replay. I guess it was Chris Lee. Correct?
Yes, it was Chris Lee.
And it seemed to be a quick whistle, and that happens. And it's great for Montreal, but, going back to your point about Price, Mitch, I mean, if that goes in, it's a 1-1 game, and goodness knows, it didn't look like Montreal, at least in the second period, I saw it was about to do any more scoring.
No, that was probably their worst period of, I think what you said initially, the third period of Game 4 was their worst, followed closely by the second period last night. They got some chance in the third period with Ottawa, trying to open it up and taking chances. They just couldn't score at the other end.
Well, this is an ongoing issue. I mean, if the 16 teams that made the playoffs, the Canadiens were 16th, puck possession numbers are bad, puck suppression numbers are bad, but I'll throw out one of those fancy stats for you. It's GSAA, goals saved above average, and Carey Price, if compared to a average NHL goalie facing the same workload, according to people who are way smarter than I am, figured out he would have saved 36.7 more goals than the average guy. And it's the issue. I mean, how big a part of this team is Price? And is it a decent team with a good goalie or a good team with a great goalie? What is it? And you need some luck somewhere along the line. And the Canadiens have had some, you know, the last cup, Montreal lost the first two at home to Quebec, and there was a violent Game 5 in Quebec City that the Canadiens managed to grit out, even though Andre Rasico, Red Light Rasico, had to play in the second period after Wah was hurt,
right,
and Wah came back in the third. And you, there are going to be tough steps along the way. Nothing's easy. And in retrospect, and I guess it was Rod who pointed this out, or Mitch, there was one injury, Beaulieu, and they've survived the series, came out well, and now they get to watch two other teams keep playing, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, Tampa Bay and Detroit.
One thing you did miss, after the game, Clark MacArthur, in a very admiring fashion, again reiterated what we've all heard about Carey Price, that he can't believe how calm he is in the net. And in that last, 90 seconds of hairy action in front of him, and he was asked about it afterwards.
That's fun. It's not stressful. It's when you're living in the moment. It's just fun. There's no other way to put it.
I mean, that says so much, doesn't it?
It does. And Carey Price, early in his career, maybe the emotions simmered, but. And there have been these temporary eruptions, the Hobbit and the whole thing in 2013 after Montreal lost to the Senators in five. You know, I can't go out, I can't go to the grocery store, I'm like a Hobbit in the hole. He's been stressed, but you go back to even in junior, and I had a nice chat with Olaf Kolzig last week, who, the former NHL goalie, now the Capitals player development coach, who owns a piece of the Tri-City Americans where Price played. And he said right away the two things that jumped out at you were how competitive he was, but also how placid he was. And sometimes that calm would get him in trouble because he would just not react the way you'd want it to. And Guy Carboneau, when he was coaching him, actually when Carey went out to play the puck, he said, sometimes you want to see some false hustle, just so he looks like he's trying. I watched Price handle the puck in this series more than I have, or at least I thought about it more. And I've often thought that maybe his skills are praised a little bit too highly. And had a chat with Rick Walmsley, the former Canadian goalie, who's the Senators goalie coach. And he said, no, everything is deserved there. He handles it really well, knows where his outs are at all times. And I was looking at maybe some of his decisions about when to play the puck. And Walmsley said, well, you know, Matt Sundin made bad decisions too. I mean, great players will make bad decisions, but his skills are excellent. And watching him pretty closely, yeah, I was wrong and Walmsley's right.
Finishing up with Michael Farber in Rome. John Herdman, the coach of our women's soccer team, will join us in about 20 minutes. We just ran an interview, a really fascinating conversation. Last time I spoke on the air with Jim Fanning was 5 years ago after Willie Davis had died, and Jim told a couple of stories that had never been told publicly about Willie Davis's single season in Montreal. For a while, he was your teammate over at CJD. Jim was a broadcaster for 2 years of Expos Baseball, and he also contributed to the morning show with Ted Blackman on a regular basis. So you got to know him extremely well over the years.
A lovely man, an absolutely lovely man who would do whatever it took. He loved the Expos, and whatever role they had him in, he would do as well as he possibly could. He was an honorable man, an honest man, and I thought very highly of him. And Dick Williams was fired in September of 1981. That was in Philadelphia. I was at the Gazette, and I flew down to Philadelphia for the game of that night. It was kind of spitting rain. We weren't sure we were going to start on time, and I spent a lot of time in Jim's office, in fact, until about 15 minutes before the first pitch. And Jim said to me, you know, it's been so long since I've been in uniform, I don't know whether the laces go over the flap or under the flap on my shoes. And so I naturally led the column I wrote, the Expos have hired a guy as a manager who doesn't know how to tie his own shoes, and which was unfair. Ian McDonald, the Expos lost that night. Ian McDonald's lead in the Gazette was, rain spoiled Jim Fanning's Expo managerial debut. It stopped. Because I think the Expos lost 7-4 or something. But Fanning was exactly what they needed at that point to run the team, because Dick Williams had just about worn out his welcome with everyone, me included, by the way, as you well know. And Dick had beaten him up, and they needed someone positive. They needed someone avuncular, and that was Jim Fanning. And I don't know how much time you've already spent on the decision to bring Steve Rogers into the game on Blue Monday.
Well, I left that up to Bill Lee.
Okay.
So about 3 minutes.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jeff Reardon couldn't pitch. Jeff Reardon had some back injuries. And I had been covering the Yankees in 1977. And in a similar situation, Whitey Herzog, who was as good a manager as I've been around, brought in Dennis Leonard. Remember Dennis Leonard? Right.
Sure, 20-game winner.
Terrific. And he gave up not a home run, but I believe it was a double to Roy White or maybe Chris Chambliss. And the same thing in a Game 5. And when I was watching it, I flashed back to a playoff game I had seen in 77. But given the options, you know, I didn't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with it to this day. And I hope that's not how people remember Jim Fanning, because he was so much more than one managerial decision. I didn't think it was right that John McHale brought him back. And I remember when they made that announcement in 1982, they started the press conference. In fact, John said, we'd like to announce, and he turned to me, if it's okay with you, Mike, that we're bringing Jim Fanning back as manager. It was either flattering or embarrassing. I'm still not sure which.
Yeah, it was. You're right, though. And about just to emphasize, put a point of emphasis on his relief appearance, back in the day, in between starts, a lot of managers would go to a starting pitcher, especially because the starters were usually better than the guys in the bullpen. But nobody in baseball down the stretch in 1981 was throwing better than Steve Rogers. He just had too much adrenaline flowing because he was too strong. His sinker didn't sink. He wasn't used to coming out of the bullpen.
Exactly. If you look what Rogers did during the playoffs and you know how he mastered Carlton a couple times, it was remarkable. But getting back to Jim, there are very few people I've met in the game who were as solid is Jim Fanning, and if you're looking for one word to sum up the man, I'd say solid.
Michael Farber in Rome, thanks for taking some time out. You can go have that pasta and wine now.
All right. Talk to you next week.
When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.